Isn't this a sports show?
I'm nothing if not smooth and professional.
And needy.
And extremely needy. That's Don't fine. Nod so hard, beards. I'm
almost entirely.
I want to eat a Jigglypuff. All right? I'll say it.
Wait,
cowards.
Hang on.
I want to eat a Jigglypuff.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Sports! We're talking about sports! Bow, 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 bow.
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
I looked at the Facebook comments earlier. No one said that we suck yet today.
That's not an invite, people.
That's not an invitation. You go back into the hole from whence you came.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810WHB.
We got some sports news, we've got some good guests tonight, and neither of those things will kick off the show because Rudy ruined the entire show about 60 seconds before it began. It wasn't really Rudy's fault.
Yeah, well, like what happened?
Well, you told me something that ruined my entire weekend, going to ruin this show today.
So confused right now.
The first mistake you
made. I usually
made,
know how I mess up the show. I have no idea.
The first mistake that you made was looking over your shoulder to look at NFL Network. And then the second mistake you made was reading the bottom third.
To be fair, I didn't look over my shoulder looking at NFL Network. I looked over my shoulder to watch the Pacers destroy the Celtics, and the NFL
sure.
Network just kind of caught me. Caught the corner of my eye.
I understand, but you saw and listen. This show has gotten a lot of mileage out of the NFL Network bottom thirds that just do nothing but cause me more pain and strife and suffering every single waking hour of my days. But would you please remind, who was it that had this very important take that is going to kick off tonight's show?
It was Terrell Davis, former Bronco Hall of Famer running back.
Yeah. And I didn't see the segment because I, at this point, can just turn
RBMs,
off my brain.
Running backs matter.
I don't know if it was there was some sort of bold prediction who goes where thing. There was something, J.J. Watt ends up with the Buccaneers and blah, 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 blah. The one that Rudy informed me about was that old TD had TG coming to KC. They were discussing Todd Gurley's potential landing spot. And we're at the point in the offseason. I didn't have to get to, need to, was cursed to hear the actual analysis. All I know is that now one of my remaining dozen brain cells is devoted to remembering the fact that Terrell Davis thinks that the Chiefs should and will sign Todd Gurley. A 97-year-old running back that has absolutely nothing to offer at this point. And that... Listen, this may just be the perfect little encapsulation of what off-season Chiefs conversations are going to be. It's just going to be example after example of what about this free agent, what about that free agent, what about this draft pick, what about that draft pick. I get it. I know. That's just where we're at this point. But to think... for a moment that the big swing you can make on behalf of the Chiefs to get them back to the Super Bowl and this time they're going to win the ding-dang thing is to sign a 97-year-old running back. So it's not really your fault, Rudy. You were merely the vessel of the thing that was going to ruin my entire weekend.
I'm fine with that. I'm just happy that I know because I was so confused.
I don't want to be having this particular brand of conversation, but like Todd Gurley at the veteran minimum would make absolutely no sense. If you said, the Chiefs specifically can either go into this year with Darrell Williams or Todd Gurley, I would take Darrell the barrel and I would not hesitate because he can do all the things that the Chiefs want him to do in the offense And also, Damian Williams. Good God, I'm going to have to deal with Damian Wilson versus Damian Williams. Unless Damian Wilson just doesn't come back. Damian Williams is on the way back, theoretically. They drafted a running back in the first round last year.
Going to do one this year.
Completely unnecessarily. They're going to take another
overall,
one at 31.
Travis Etienne.
They're going to keep dropping one pick for the next 30 years, and just every single time it's going to be a running back. Last year was running back at 32. This year it's going to be running back at 31. Next year it'll be running back at 30, then 29 and 28, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, there is a tweet from Tiger Woods' Twitter account that I'm going to read now. Completely just fresh off the tweet deck because it's news about Tiger Woods. This is as fitting a transition from nothing to something very serious all at once. Tiger has moved to Cedars Sinai Medical Center and received follow-up procedures on his injuries this morning. The procedures were successful, and he is now recovering and in good spirits. Tiger and his family want to thank you all for all the wonderful support and messages they've received over the past few days. We will not have any further updates at this time. Thank you for your continued privacy, TGR. Does he sign things off with TGR? This is very much written in, like, third person.
I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
I don't know if I have either.
But I guess.
Very strange.
I mean, Tiger. I get it. Tiger.
Do you think that that's a stock market tag? Do you think there's something for TGR, dollars on TGR? I bet there is. Oop, maybe not. There is Teton Gravity Research, action sports, skiing, snowboarding, and biking.
There is TGRF, which is TGR Financial. Currently trading at $12, they're up 2.13% today.
There's TGIF.
I don't think it's a publicly traded company, Beards. I don't think TGI Fridays is a publicly traded company. I've searched, and I do not have a stock ticker for $TGIF.
When was the last time you've been to a TGI Fridays?
When I was 12, maybe. I've eaten some of their frozen.
It was on a Tuesday. Yeah, 2002.
I've had some of their frozen foods that you can just make at home.
Yeah,
are pretty clutch.
I also don't know if I've ever actually been in a TGI Fridays.
I've been once.
I've definitely had like a handful of times the frozen food section TGI Fridays, like appetizers.
Sure, those are very good.
Very good.
So anyway, the Chiefs are going to sign Todd Gurley. Tiger Woods is doing okay, and TGI Fridays may not exist anymore.
TGR. Todd Gurley.
Running back.
It's a sign.
$TGRB does not have a stock ticker either.
You think you can get a custom Chiefs jersey with $TGR?
You can try.
If they sign Todd Gurley, somebody's got to get a jersey that says $TGR on it.
I'm not going to even offer to get tased if that happens. I'm just going to have an aneurysm.
And then the number is just whatever the stock, the price is on TGR Financial, which right now is just 12. So you get 12.00 or just 12. It's $12.
I'm just so I think it was Charlie Casserly's mock draft. There's a little bit of sort of pseudo NFL news we'll get to in a second. I think it was Charlie Casserly's mock draft where he had the Falcons trading back to like 7 and then drafting one of the running backs. I can't remember. Is one of those guys consensus first off the board at this point? I refuse to learn anything about
the
running backs.
What team again?
The Falcons.
The Falcons. My guess is it was Travis Etienne.
I don't think it was. I think if it was, I would have remembered that. I'm going to find it. That's all right. I'm going to Google. I'm pulling up Charlie Casserly's mock draft.
Charlie Casserly.
Traded back to 8 and took Najee Harris.
Oh, yeah, the Alabama guy.
I don't know.
He'll be the first running back.
I don't know how many times we're going to have to. We are fully in SpongeBob. How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man territory here? Where I simply do not understand why this is so difficult. And also, imagine being the Falcons, picking in the top 10, even if you trade back. Imagine
if they pass on a quarterback to drop back to 8.
To take a running back.
To draft a running back.
What are we or the Falcons with a historically stout defense? Probably nobody in the top five there that you could just pick and try to improve that defensive standing.
Not that you should draft a running back at any point in the first round, but if you trade it back where you ended up with multiple first round picks or whatever,
then you draft multiple running backs in
and
the
you
first
drafted
round.
That running back at like 31 or 32. Again, and 32. I would not call it the good move, but it's a move you can at the very least like deal with. You don't do it at 8.
In Casterly's mock, like, he has the Panthers trading up to the Falcons fourth overall pick to take Trey Lance. If you can take a quarterback, just do it. Or if you want to give Matt Ryan another year and then you think you can draft a quarterback next year, fine.
If you genuinely do not like any of the guys, then like it's fine to not draft them.
Listen to Casterly's logic. Listen to this.
You don't draft the running back.
The Falcons trade back and still get their top choice, a dynamic running back whom Arthur Smith can build his offense around. I know we rarely see running backs go this early these days, but Todd Gurley is a pending free agent, and Atlanta has to have a strong running game if it's going to get back to competing for a playoff spot.
Josh,
they don't, and they also don't need a top 10 pick for a running back to have a better running game.
Hey, Josh.
Todd Gurley being a pending free agent has nothing to do with this. He was irrelevant last year.
I think they might draft a running back in the first round. I could, if you're telling me, I didn't even think about it. I forgot it was Arthur Smith was the head coach, whose offense was obviously like built around Derrick Henry. Oh God, he might draft running back in the first round.
That offense was not at its most successful when it was built around Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
The two most important players on that offense are Ryan Tannehill and AJ Brown. What are we doing?
I think they might draft running back in the first round. I hope they do.
Yeah, go for it. Go bleep it up, baby. Go for it.
Najee Harris seems like a nice guy. I hope. You know what?
So does Clyde, and I've had to spend the last entire year.
Yeah, but we're not talking about,
spend 11 straight months.
But here's
months.
The thing. We're not talking about the Chiefs. I am fine for chaos around the NFL. If 31 teams in the NFL want to draft a running back in the first round, so long as it's not the Chiefs, I am 100% here for it.
The Chiefs already did it!
I know, but we are talking about going forward. Like, I'm not talking about going backwards.
We cannot claim any form of superiority in any of this.
Oh, I'm not claiming superiority. I'm just saying I like chaos. So, like, I'm fine. If the Falcons want to draft a running back in the top 10, I'm 100% good with it. I hope the Chiefs do not make this move going forward again. But if 30 other one teams in the NFL next year want to draft running back the first round, I'm here for it.
I just can't. Here's the other thing. I'm checking on this right now. Casterly's first round here. Harris is the only running back that goes in the first round. The Falcons, I believe, have their own second round pick, which would be the fourth pick in the second round.
Yeah.
But by that point, all the good running backs are going to be taken.
Literally only one running back would even maybe be off the board at that point based on his own board. This is so silly. I can't believe we're doing this.
I like it. NFL. Anarchy.
I know that this is completely, this is a totally unnecessary time to bring up a running back conversation, but man, it is so silly the way that we get stuck in this conversation.
And like, this is one thing one difference between me and you, where you want all 32 NFL teams to be smart, and
yes,
I really only care if there's one. I enjoy watching 31 other teams just with like pure chaos and do dumb things, just so long as it's obviously not my team, the team that I root for. And you know, they mostly don't do dumb things. I say mostly because they did draft, you know, a guy at 32 last year.
So here's a story that I saw today that's more closely tied to the conversation we're currently having. We'll talk about the Disney deal and what it means to the NFL salary cap in a little bit. But there was a story from, I don't have his actual given name up on the screen right now, but on Twitter he's PFF underscore Moo, M-O-O. He does some really excellent work for Pro Football Focus.
Is he a cow?
He is not. He has a really interesting piece up on Pro Football Focus evaluating drafts over the last 4 years based on Pro Football Focus's wins above replacement stat. And over the last 4 years, the Chiefs are in first place, and it's not close in terms of wins above replacement wins above replacement above expectation for their draft picks. Now, you can look at the chart if you find that online if you want to look at it. There is a little cluster of dots, and most teams have a pretty middling cluster of dots. And then there is a red dot all the way over to the right side that is Patrick Mahomes.
That helps.
It really helps. And he goes on to talk about, like, listen, the Chiefs are in first place there because of Patrick Mahomes. That whenever you adjust by position, so, like, Mahomes is in the 99.9th percentile of outcomes for a quarterback selected with the 10th overall pick. So he is the most valuable player we've ever measured after 4 years of play with 11 wins above replacement. 11 is a lot.
And it also feels like a little low, but that's just because of how incredible of a player he is, right?
Right, but like compare, like how many games does he win that Alex Smith doesn't over 4 years? 11's about right.
For sure, it's just one of those deals where no number, and this is just partly how good he is. No number ever really feels like it puts it truly into justice because he's just that good.
The same is true for Quentin Nelson, as his projected wins above replacement of 1.6 after 4 years is the 99.9th percentile of outcomes for offensive guards selected within the top 10. But then they go through and says, by accounting of the position for the position and measuring the percentile instead of the war difference between the outcome and expectation, we measure draft success in the same way teams might think about it. So they then change it to adjust for position, and the Chiefs then drop down below the Colts, Saints, Cowboys, Bills, Bucks, Ravens, and then it's the Chiefs. So the Chiefs ended up at 7 there over the last 4 years. And this is a conversation I thought we might get to at some point pre-draft. We could talk about it some today. Then the Chiefs, then weighing by round, the Chiefs go back up to 3rd behind the Saints and the Colts. The Chiefs are up there throughout all of these. They do it by positional value and round. The Chiefs drop back down to around 7, it looks like, again. It's interesting because I will be way more curious to see what that chart looks like whenever Mahomes is not a part of the evaluation. Because also, when you look through just the last 3 years, which is more of a becomes more of a Brett Veach conversation, because Mahomes, listen, Veach should get a good chunk of credit for Patrick Mahomes. I think that's relatively clear at this point. But within just the drafts in the last three seasons, and frankly, even if you want to go to the 4 year chunk, including Patrick Mahomes, these last four drafts paint a very interesting picture of where the Chiefs are at right now. And it's why the results, even adjusting for how excellent Mahomes was, really surprised me in that piece, because it's pretty thin with one absolute gleaming, shining, perfect diamond. Then it's a bunch of relative busts and guys that didn't end up fully living up to expectation. So, like, 2017, you get Mahomes and Kareem Hunt, who actually right now is probably getting a little bit of a wins above replacement boost. Not much of one, I'd imagine, but a little bit of one in Cleveland, which isn't actually helping the Chiefs. But whatever. You get Mahomes and Kareem Hunt in the 3rd round. Tano Passanio probably going to not get a second contract. Never lived up to a second round pick designation. Jehu Chesson, think he's probably out of the league. Kimeh Ligwe, Leon McQuay. Same story for all three of those guys. At the very least, not Chiefs. Haven't been for a minute now. 2018, they trade up for Breland Speaks. Gone. Derek Nnadi, rotational defensive lineman.
His value, you can, like, what he does best is obviously doesn't bring necessarily a ton of value being a run stuffer, but he is very good at what he does.
He is a professional football player that if you had him on the open market right now, he would not get a 3rd-round pick from another team, but also you had him on his rookie contract. It's fine. I'm not hurt about Derek Nnadi at all. He's a good player who's not Chris Jones, but he's a valuable piece. Dorian O'Daniel, special teamer. Armani Watts, special teamer. Trayvon Smith, Khalil McKenzie, gone. Those are 6th-round picks. I'm not, like, stressing it. Dorian O'Daniel was a 3rd-round pick. Mm-hmm. We forget about this. He was the 100th overall pick. I'm going to go to the 3rd-round pick from last year momentarily. That doesn't make any sense, Beards. You just heard a number and hadn't talked enough yet?
Yeah.
All right. Do you know who the 69th pick was that year?
No.
I do not.
Me neither. 2 years ago, you get the, or 2018, you get the, so you have the Breland Speaks, Derek Nnadi, Dorian Daniel, Armani Watts, Trayvon Smith, Khalil McKenzie. Derek Nnadi is a professional football player. That's the only real thumbs up out of that draft class. 2019, Mecole Hardman, open market right now, would not get a second round pick in return. Will he develop? I mean, I'll give him another year, but it's not a super bright picture painted at this point. Juan Thornhill, good pick in the 2nd round, would probably be a 1st round pick if you redrafted that draft. Injury makes you hesitate a little bit, but he looked good in the playoffs. Feel pretty good about Juan Thornhill, 2nd round pick. Colin Saunders was the 3rd round pick. He went 84th. He lost his role to undrafted free agent Tershawn Wharton this year. I know Colin Saunders was a long-term developmental pick and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Tershawn Wharton was a rookie from Missouri S&T. The idea that, you know, Colin Saunders, going 84th from Western Illinois, would need more time than Tershawn Wharton, and that's something you should just expect, is kind of a bummer to say out loud, because I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I think right now you've got to look at Colin Saunders as if you get proven wrong, lovely, but it seems really unlikely. Back into that draft, actually, pretty strong, which I have sort of a thesis statement also to maybe take this a step or two farther. But you get Rashad Fenton in the sixth, Darwin Thompson in the sixth, Nick Allegretti in the seventh. Nick Allegretti was a starting caliber offensive lineman in the middle of an offensive line that wasn't great. He came in a pinch, played well enough. He was not a gaping hole in that offensive line. Mm-hmm. Seventh round pick who sat for a year and then played. You'll take that 100%. Rashad Fenton, same deal. Darwin Thompson, they don't like as much as I do, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Fine.
Rashad Fenton has like a hard time getting on the field for being a pretty dang good cornerback, just because the Chiefs have just weirdly had a pretty good cornerback like career the last you know year or two.
I'll be interested to see if they put him back in the slot and put Snead back outside next year. That'll be an interesting sort of thing to see how they feel about Rashad Fenton, and also where they feel like Snead is at his best, because I think you could make an argument either direction there pretty easily. The last year you get Clyde, who is a fine running back that you spent a very valuable asset on. Willie Gay, his rookie season was disappointing. There's no argument to that. I'm optimistic about Willie Gay, but I somewhat blindly at this point.
And it's disappointing in the sense that, like, because I imagine there are going to be some people, like, when they hear that, like, well, what did he do is bad. It's not that he did anything bad. It's the fact that he just did nothing. He never took over.
It's the same way that I hope that a lot of people aren't thinking that, because that's the same reason that Colin Saunders' season was disappointing.
Yeah, it's just the fact that he wasn't on the field. Now, for Saunders, it's a little worse because it's you got your spot lost to an undrafted free agent, whereas with Willie Gay, you can at least make the argument.
Damien Wilson and Ben Neiman.
But I mean, like, those are guys who have been in the defense. That's fair. To me, like, that's the argument, right? Like,
he wasn't in and then lost his spot like Saunders
did. Undrafted rookie.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's fine. I also had higher expectations.
Yeah, absolutely still disappointing, though. Because, again, the thought was that come, like, October, he would be starting. He would be playing the majority of the snaps.
I haven't talked to him about this much recently, but like, people who really, really, I think, had a genuine finger on the pulse, like Nate Taylor. Nate was publicly saying, listen, because we were asking, you know, week two, when are we going to see Willie Gay? And he said, listen, come back in October. And then October, he was like, well, what about, you know, come back in September, November. And then September, November, honestly, Nate was going, let's talk about it in December. And did I get my months out of order?
You said October and then September, December.
Yeah, Pobody's nerfed. But, you know, Nate was kind of hitting the snooze button because his read of what the Chiefs were going to do with Willie Gay was that, like, he was like secret. We were in secret weapon territory with Willie Gay that just never showed up. L'Jarius Sneed looks like a vision. L'Jarius Sneed in the fourth round, he would probably be a first round pick, which is hard to do as a dude drafted 138 who played mostly safety his last year at Louisiana Tech. That's great. Mike Dana. Seems like he's a rotational defensive end. Maybe he develops. That's fine for your fifth round pick. Bo Peak, he's TBD. The main thing, there are a couple of things that come out of this for me. One is that the successes here are typically built on one really good pick in each draft, except for in 2018, which is pretty much a wash. Well, except for Derek Nnadi, who is a
solid
football player. Yeah. One thing that is interesting to me is how many of these successes were not their first pick or even were picks significantly later in the draft. And the other thing is it should be a reminder that even as we can look at all of these disappointing draft classes over the last few years with a couple of individual exceptions make it no longer a fully disappointing draft class on the scale of the rest of the NFL. Whenever you look at the Pro Football Focus story that I'm referencing, you find the Chiefs being... Is there a helicopter in the studio? And a motor... Is there a motorcycle riding a helicopter right now? What is that sound? Is there a plane? Is everything okay?
I can see the helicopter.
All right.
Plane. It's right there.
It's very. Is it a double blade situation?
Could be.
That is a beefy. That is a beefy noised helicopter. That's definitely a plane of some sort. Flying very low. This might not be good radio, but I'm extremely distracted by this. Which could really say a lot of things about this show in perpetuity. That is a... it is getting lower. Where's that thing landing? Is there a secret airport down the street that I don't know about? Is Five Guys also an airport?
Well, Five Guys, it's going the opposite direction of Five Guys.
I have no directional awareness whatsoever.
Five Guys is behind
you. And I don't
you.
Know my months, apparently.
October, September, December, November.
You forgot March.
Ah.
It's in there somewhere.
The leap year. We skip March.
That's what that means. Anyway, I love Drew Brees.
Anywho.
But, like, even whenever you see, and if you, there are some dots way in the wrong direction on the Chiefs' little chart here, and I imagine that it's Breland Speaks down there. They traded up in the second round, defensive end, relatively high impact position, and just gave him absolutely nothing.
Never on the ground, though.
Honestly, Beards, you have to turn off the Celtics game for 5 minutes and put yourself in the penalty box, the no TV penalty box, because you missed several chances to yell the phrase never on the ground when I referenced Breland Speaks.
That's okay. Jeff Teague was on the ground. It made up for it.
We should just see if we can maybe whenever we know a Celtics game is going to be on, you guys just switch chairs because
he can't watch it from here.
Because it'll be way harder for him to watch it from that seat, and the odds of Beards actually being engaged while the Celtics are playing is just so low anyway.
Are the odds of him being engaged high even when the Celtics aren't playing though?
I mean, higher, right?
Yeah, higher, for sure.
There's, like, Celtics game Beards, any NBA game Beards, no NBA game Beards. And they're all kind of, they're three evolutions of the same distracted Pokemon. But they have, one is severely more powerful.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense.
Anywho, I like winning.
I have a lot of whips.
That one sit there for a second. And action. We'll just do a pick up here. Beards at 3-2-1. But you can see that the Chiefs, even with all of the misses that we've talked about, if you just simply getting Patrick Mahomes, Juan Thornhill, Legarius Sneed right puts you above average in the NFL. I mean, Mahomes, again, single-handedly puts you in first. Even just in these last few years. Having a handful of misses, but getting real production out of, again, you know, even Nick Allegretti for where he was drafted, Juan Thornhill, Legarius Sneed. That'll do it, more or less. That'll lift you above average.
And while Mecole Hardman has been a disappointment in part because of players who were drafted after him and the expectations, it's not that he hasn't provided any production. Like,
sure.
It's not a Breland Speaks second round pick. Like,
he
is providing production. It's just very disappointing because we thought he would be farther along at this point. It's clear he doesn't fully understand what Patrick Mahomes is doing. And also DK Metcalf was drafted after him.
When you say it that way,
it hurts.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really,
and maybe that's
really
not fair. Like, DK Metcalf being drafted Mecole Hardman, that's not Mecole Hardman's fault.
Sure.
But like,
it's not great.
It's always going to be mentioned, you know? It's like, that's always going to be part of his story.
I don't know the answer to this. Do you remember why the Chiefs didn't have their second-round pick in 2013 when they had the number one overall pick? They had two-thirds.
Two second-round picks for Alex Smith.
Oh, yeah. They gave up the first pick in the second round for Alex. Or did they already move down? They moved down for some other reason. They
in
also 2013? Ended up with two-thirds. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in 2013 that was the Alex Smith.
No, they definitely traded a second in 2013 and 14, definitely.
Yeah.
But they ended up with two-thirds somehow. Not important in any way whatsoever.
I wonder if they traded 2 seconds for Alex Smith and a third. I've got the article here. I'll scan it.
One of those thirds was Travis Kelce. One of them was Niall Davis. Equally important.
You went
players.
One for one. Niall Davis. Which great is, kick returner.
Like that draft, Eric Fisher, Travis Kelce were first two picks. I could give a bleep about getting Niall Davis, Nico Johnson, Sanders Cummings, Eric Cush, Braden Wilson, and Mike Catapano wrong. That's fine. Does not bother if you get those two right. The one thing, and this is something that I think we gloss over often, where you might say, oh, they should trade down. You got to have a partner to trade down with. The Chiefs should trade down from 31. I don't know if they're going to have anyone that wants to trade up to 31 for any particular reason. But I do think it's worth noting that the Chiefs have had some real success in terms of your later round evaluations that turn into players that outperform their draft slot. And their top picks these last couple of years have not been highly productive in the way that you would hope. But again, you got guys like way down the draft board who actually have been. I would, Brett Veach's MO is more trade up, bleep the consequences, let's go get the guy that we want, which I don't mind that mindset if you're really passionate about a guy. But for the Chiefs, those moves up were for Breland Speaks and Mecole Hardman. And that's not the outcome that you want whenever you're really passionate about moving up for somebody. Frankly, they didn't move up for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, obviously, but like, that was their first-round pick that they had some hype about. It's kind of interesting. But then again, even with all of those things that I would, all of those what I would consider misses, they have still been, even without Mahomes, in the top half of the pack these last few years, because just getting a few impactful players will totally change where you land in terms of draft success.
That second, third round pick, I'm 99.9. I'm scrolling down to double check. I'm pretty sure it was a compensatory pick because it was one of the last three picks of the draft. It's got a little asterisk next to it. I'm just trying to see if that's what that means. I'm sure that's exactly what it means. I'm just looking for the key, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're legally not allowed to take a break until you do tie up that loose thread, so.
Oh, man, where's this key?
The
at?
Thing that I was confused oh, by, boy. I think, yeah, because Travis Kelce would have been the first pick of the third round or top right up
why
there.
Doesn't, oh, you know what? You know why? Maybe.
Yeah, 96th pick in the third round would be Niall Davis.
It was a compensatory selection. There's the key. I missed it.
Mystery solved. If you enjoyed this, we recommend watching Knives Out. It's only slightly less titillating of a mystery. This one has more twists and also more murders. Whenever we come back, find out which member of Almost Entirely Sports won't be joining us next episode.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know what you do after you run the ball on 1st and 10 and you get 0 yards? You run that ball again. You establish that run.
On Sports Radio 810. WHB.
We'll get to the NFL sort of salary cap implications of some of the news from today, but I wanted to answer a question that I think is actually worth spending a second on from, I believe it was from GE Metzl on Twitch.
You're asking the question, I think you are.
Yeah, how many years do you give a player before they can be graded fairly in their performances? I understand that it's dependent on the organization, team, talent around them, etc. It's a good question, specifically for what PFF was using here. There was actually a really interesting thing. I did not know that this was going to be the case. I'll quote from this article one more time. We want to examine recent draft success, but players drafted in 2018 or later haven't yet played 4 years. Luckily, WAR after 4 years is highly correlated to WAR after 3 or even 2 years, with R and then the little triangle 2 values of 0.96 and 0.87 respectively. Therefore, we can assess each team's 2018 and 2019 draft successes by predicting the WAR numbers after 4 years with a high degree of accuracy. It even makes sense to include the 2020 draft, as rookie WAR and draft position predict the WAR after 4 years with a value of 0.6. The draft position adds 0.05 compared to you're only using rookie WAR. There's some numbers in there, and this is not necessarily for our all evaluation, but for the PFF evaluation here, they're pretty confident that they're going to be able to predict with a pretty good degree of certainty these guys that have been drafted just in the last couple of years because of what they have in terms of data about wins above replacement over the course of establishing what that data means, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, like, and like it is different for every player. There's always examples of guys who maybe struggled a little bit. I mean, again, like look at a guy like Ryan Tannehill, right? And like for him, it was prolonged. Who struggled mm-hmm. early, they developed late. Some guys develop late. Most players are who they are, and you can tell pretty early. There's some development, right? Like TK Tano is a better player now than he was as a rookie. He at least has some impactful moments, mm-hmm. but it's a small improvement. Like after 2 years, you're gonna have a pretty good idea. Now again, there are exceptions in there, and I would say especially now for any player who's say been in the league for 2 years or less, having to deal with COVID off seasons,
sure,
you can make the argument for why that player still has a lot more room for growth. You more times than not will know what a player is by the end of year two. At the very least, what tier fair. A player is.
Yeah.
A player who, again, like Tano Pastor, we knew after 2 years, was not going to all of a sudden become J.J. Watt. It just was never going to happen.
There is a margin for error that you can be relatively confident mm-hmm. in. And also, by the way, I mean, you can pick all these dudes individually. I'll also say Juan Thornhill, Colin Saunders, maybe Mecole Hardman all would have had, I'm quite confident, had less of an impact this year than they did last year. For Thornhill, because he was coming off an injury. It's not a reflection on him as a player, but I'm guessing that his number was lower than it would have been than it was in his rookie season. Saunders played more his rookie season than he did his second year. Hardman might just be close. Maybe you expected an uptick, but he kind of plateaued, whatever. Nick Allegretti ended up getting way more playing time in year two than he did in year one. All that to say that there are going to be There are going to be, I'd imagine, largely offsetting variances. But that's, I definitely can't do all of that math and tell you all that confidently. What I will say is from my perspective, I feel like it's not terribly difficult to say after two full seasons, all right, I think this guy, with a 90% certainty or with, you know, in a range of 100 outcomes, this dude's career is going to be within these 10 sort of ticks, if you will. You know, if you're zero, you're out of the league tomorrow. If you're 100, you're a Hall of Famer. You could probably get to a pretty good percentile in terms of evaluating those guys, where I feel pretty good about Juan Thornhill, and there's still, you know, maybe he ends up being, whenever he's fully healthy again, maybe he's a multi-time All-Pro, and then maybe he never's a whole lot better than he was, you know, at his best as a rookie, or maybe that was his ceiling with the injury, but that's a relatively tight sort of number of potential outcomes. And then there's some cases also, and this is when you're going to hear me start getting away from the math and into the feeling and putting your hand in the dirt. Sometimes you know what you're watching. Like you said, I think it was pretty clear at this point, and Pastrnak has been in the league for a long time, so he's probably a bad example. Breland Speaks, we knew the answer there, at the very least, whenever the Chiefs cut him.
Yeah.
And they let him go with really, like, I'm wondering how many snaps.
It was
16
clear
games
after half a season that he, at the very least, could not play that 3-4 rush linebacker spot, that 3-4 outside linebacker, like they tried to make him play.
Yeah, they didn't even give him.
Like, it was clear then, and it was pretty clear early, just, and it wasn't so much based off what we saw, but based off clearly what the Chiefs saw, because he was so low on the depth chart when they moved him back to actual defensive line.
Yeah.
That it was like, this just wasn't going to work.
So I think the phrasing was something about grading them fairly. If you're going to talk about like giving up on someone, that I think you can probably find that cutoff point. I'm guessing that there aren't a ton of situations over your average NFL year where a player gets fully given up on, quote unquote, mm-hmm. and ends up making, you know, that team look foolish after the fact. Because also, especially whenever you're the team that drafts someone, there was not a worse day of press for Brett Veach in his time as GM as the day they cut Breland Speaks.
Yep.
I mean, it would have been
his very first draft pick.
It would have been better, sort of just from a PR standpoint, to just have him be. They ended up losing Taco Charlton. You know, they had some of these rotational defensive ends that they lost the depth. It would have made more sense. It would have been better from a PR perspective to just let Breland Speaks be on the roster and see if he can end up doing literally anything, and they just went, nope, this is definitely not happening. I have no concern that Breland Speaks is going to end up next year on some roster and he's going to have 10 sacks.
Yeah.
Just not a chance of that. Now, again, would it be too soon to say definitively on Colin Saunders? I don't know. He basically played a year and a couple of games. Feel like he's not going to be Chris Jones. Is he going to be an NFL player? Could he be Derek Nnadi? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And again, there are always going to be exceptions to this, right? Like Shaq Barrett is a guy who had, let me look at it real fast. It looks like I'm doing quick math off the top of my head. His first 6 or 5 years in the league, he had 14 sacks. And then in 2019, he has 19 and a half, right? Like you're going to get those exceptions, but they're not the rule. So like, and vice versa. I remember Michael Clain back in the day, a receiver. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I remember Michael Clayton. Yeah,
I pulled up his numbers because I was like, I'm pretty sure he did it. He had this the opposite where his rookie year he was just shy of 1,200 yards receiving, and then second year in the league 372, 356, 301, 484. So like you're gonna get some of those where a guy is either bad at the start of his career and he does develop, and maybe it's not even development as much as it's just opportunities given. Like Shaq Barrett's problem was probably was more about the fact that he was behind Von Miller, and it's hard to get on the field when you're Von Miller's backup. He may have always been good. It's just Von Miller was great. Whereas like a guy like Michael Clayton's great as a rookie and then starts to downtrend. But those guys again are always they're the exception. They're the 5% on either side. They're not the, you know, the majority, the 90% of the players.
The other thing about Michael Clayton is that critics gave it a 91%, but the audience score is actually 69%.
Nice.
Did George Clooney win an Oscar for that? Did that end up winning a bunch of Oscars of some sort? Sure. I haven't seen the film. But I did want to find the Rotten Tomatoes. And, yeah, I mean, that just shows you, again, you know, you think, wow, boy, mm-hmm. Michael Clayton, this looks like a high-flying, award-winning thing. There, critics are 91% in favor of this.
He was nominated for the Academy Award. He did not win it.
He did, though.
But then Beers
just overlooking awards here, how he won the Toronto Films Critic Award. The Toronto Films Critic Association Award for Best Actor for that movie.
See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. The Toronto
San Francisco
Film Critics.
Bay Area Film Critics Circle Award for Best Actor. The Washington, D.C. Area Films Critic Association for Best Actor.
Critic. Trophy. Critics
the
give
National
it 91%.
National Board of Review Award for Best Actor.
Critics give it 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. Audience score, 69%.
Daniel Day-Lewis won it for There Will Be Blood that year.
That makes sense. I don't hate that. That seems reasonable.
But did he win the Toronto Films Critic Association Award for Best Actor?
I believe the answer to that is now no.
It's a no.
Did you guys know, be honest, did you guys know The Walking Dead was still happening?
Yeah.
There's a trailer going on right now, I believe.
Just because it'll never die.
And it looks like it has stormtroopers now? I'm not even really joking. The trailer just ended, but they really look like they might be basically stormtroopers.
I mean, it makes sense. Eventually,
no,
the stormtroopers come to Earth and become zombies.
Don't give them that much credit for no good reason. Don't say that it makes sense that
makes
The Walking Dead
sense.
Has stormtroopers now.
Oh, yeah, because it makes sense that there are just zombies walking around.
Stormtroopers are from a different franchise. There's
maybe it's a crossover episode.
Wow. I feel like the entire timeline of The Walking Dead would have changed in an enormous way if you just add one lightsaber to the whole universe. Because the whole show at that point becomes about the power of whoever has the lightsaber.
I honestly think the world's in a worse shape if there is just one lightsaber.
Maybe.
I don't think the country
it's like the talking stick you had in elementary school.
What's the bad guy's name that has the baseball bat with the barbed wire?
Neiman.
I don't think it's Neiman or Newman.
It's
Newman.
It's Negan.
Negan?
Yeah, Negan.
So Newman.
N-E-G-A-N.
If Newman would have had a lightsaber instead of a baseball bat with barbed wire, that show's very different.
That scene wouldn't have been as gruesome as it was, that's for sure. That scene would have been over real fast.
I just remember there being some very gruesome scene where he beats somebody up with the baseball bat.
Not happy. Because they showed it. And oh boy.
Not pleasant?
Not pleasant at all.
It was, though, a well-done
piece of cinematography where, like, it was the end of the previous season, basically, where he's beating him in the head. And so you go through the whole, like, you know, off-season, in between seasons of the show, wondering who just got their head bleeped in. And then it shows him. Then the start of the next season, you see the guy get his head beat in.
Was he okay?
Rest in peace, Glenn.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert for 3 or 4 years ago of Walking Dead!
Yeah.
Spoiler alert! You can't just say bleep like that! I'm gonna go find out what happened in the last episode of WandaVision and tell you about it before you have a chance to watch it, Rudy.
It's totally the same.
I will spoil it for myself also in that regard. Please, Twitch chat, don't say anything about WandaVision. Be cool. No, we will ban you.
I can't even look at Twitch chat.
We can ban you. We will ban you from all chats if you spoil the latest episode of WandaVision. Although if there is either a lightsaber or a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, please do tell us about it ahead of time.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Is it okay for your 9-year-old and 11-year-old? Depends on if you're okay with a really uncomfortable C-3PO droid sex scene. Is that true? Who knows? Yes, that was actually in the movie. That's the only one of the three that I said. There is a long, awkward, drawn-out C-3PO lovemaking scene.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Just imagine C-3PO going, oh, dear. That
may have been the first thing I thought of.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Two things here. One is a text that I just got from our good friend Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. It was a text, and I'm going to show the picture to Beards and Rudy simultaneously so you guys can react in real time. Beards, go and kick that fan on behind you. All
right.
He texted me a photo, and it says, tonight's dinner.
I can't see from here.
You can look at the camera if you want. Put it on the back camera. I'll hold it up.
Oh, I was just going to zoom on you right there. But
It is a deeply upsetting photograph of a bowl of otherwise very pleasant-looking mac and cheese drizzled with ketchup. Bone apple tea. I also should probably just have like a legal disclaimer just that is an auto response to any of my texts that just says, you have texted me between the hours of 7 and 10 p.m. on a weekday. Your text may or may not be read on Almost Entirely Sports. Because I didn't ask him if I could share that. But it's something we've talked about explicitly on the show before. So
when people text you during the hours of a radio show, like it's like if you email essentially, like if you tweet at the station, right, or you email the station,
That
like,
just needs to be understood.
Like, there is an understanding that you call, like that stuff can and may go out over there. You text Josh during the show. That text very well may end up on the air.
Even if it begins with, hey, Josh, please, please, please don't read this on the air.
It might go out over there.
Might go out over the air. Yeah. Do you want to hear Alex Smith? He did he had the interview with GQ that was very interesting that we actually haven't talked about yet. We might talk about it some after we talk to Verderam. But he did Twitter crawl, basically. I think he went through a few accounts. But this is one of the tweets that he responded to that Curtis Siebolt just tweeted out.
Hey GQ, I'm Alex Smith, and I'm going undercover on the internet. This is actually me. Okay, let's check Twitter. At K Siebolt, how much, if any, credit for the Chiefs' success goes to Alex Smith for his professionalism and mentorship during Patrick Mahomes' first year? Well, I would probably say most, if not all, the credit probably deserves to go to me. No, honestly, I hear some of this talk and it's really flattering. You know, my time there in KC was really special to me and still is, but I'm so happy for what these guys are doing. I wish I taught Pat how to throw sidearm across the field while backpedaling, you know, but I didn't.
It's just, Alex Smith just seems unendingly pleasant. I really like Alex Smith.
I'm going to say it. Chiefs should give him a contract to be the backup quarterback.
It would be fun.
Man deserves a Super Bowl ring. Come get in Kansas City.
And he could probably hang around for a couple more years.
Absolutely.
Honestly, you could also look around the NFL and definitely find a team that could probably start Alex Smith.
Yeah, but
reasonably.
Like, I want him to be our backup to win a Super Bowl. He deserves a ring.
I would be completely okay with that. We'll talk about maybe that, probably a bunch of other different things with Matt Verderam of Fansided next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.